Support for Commodity Week Online comes from Strategic Farm Marketing, now offering a fall look-back option that will add 50 cents per bushel to your revenue claim. Details at sfarmmarketing.com. Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This is the January 31 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason for this 31st day of January, the last trading day of the month. Our panelists today will include Brian Stark of the Andersons. He's from right here in Champaign County. Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, will join us as well. Our special guest today, Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Well, let's begin our discussion this afternoon, gentlemen, with this question. As you look out over the past month and realize that corn futures didn't change a lot, but the wheat futures managed to drop 50 cents in both the nearby March and July, thereabouts, does it make very much difference to the way you view the commodity markets and the potential for corn to continue to hold strong? We'll start with you, Merrill Crowley.
Well, it would if our weather tended to get better. I think our cold weather has helped keep our corn market up, and our exports has been solid, also helped supporting our corn market. Now, last week's was good for the wheat, but most of our exports have been going to other countries for our wheat. So I think the corn is holding pretty much like it should, and the wheat is dropping according to its fundamentals at the present time.
And Brian Stark.
I think that's an interesting question, Todd, because I've been watching that spread, and obviously as wheat does succumb and make 3.5-year lows here a couple of days ago, it does concern me a little bit given the fact we've got a plentiful supply of corn, and I don't think we want to encourage wheat feeding. So if wheat can't rebound off of business announced like to Egypt this week, you wonder if corn is going to eventually succumb to bearish fundamentals. But Merrill's right. As long as we continue to see positive export numbers like we did this week, I think that does give corn a little bit of support here in the short term.
Yeah, Merrill, can you talk just a bit about that export number, because it was an awfully large figure?
Well, it is a little surprising when you consider the competition we have throughout the world, although currently South America, you know, would be probably pretty light on their supplies. And we are hearing some talk about the problems Ukraine is having with the civil unrest and people deciding to come buy U.S. corn instead of taking the chance of losing their supply chain from the Ukraine.
When you talk to producers, Brian Stark, and they think about their old crop that's stored in, either in the bin or in the elevator, that's unpriced, do you have different sets of advice for them based on whether they're paying storage to you or not?
I don't think so. I mean, obviously, you don't want to accrue charges given the market being bound in a range. Don't get me wrong with grain in the elevator, but I think the risk of holding onto the crop too long, being long in essence, two crops potentially going into the summer hoping for a drought, is not really a good strategy either. I think if you could get it or see a 10 to 15 cent bounce in corn, I think you'd see a lot of corn move, whether it's in the elevator or off farm. But we're running up to some pretty strong technical resistance, and the market just doesn't seem to want to break through that 440 area on the March.
Does it give you hope, Merrill, that we posted the March contract to hook up in the monthly trade 12 cents higher?
It does, but we really need to get to the 435-436 double top that we have sitting there if we're to see any chance of going up and challenging 450 once again. You look back, your averages clear back in November for the March contract is 430, and where are we at today? 434.
Do you suppose that the new crop, which is at 450 at the end of this week, has more downside potential at the moment than the old crop does?
Well, there's some unknowns with the new crop, but yeah, if we could get through some of these unknowns of what is our acres going to be, what's our crop insurance going to be. I mean, everybody talks about acres and they look at whether or not the bean price or the corn price, but I think your guarantee from the crop insurance is going to have a lot to do with some of the decision on how many corn acres you have.
And on the corn acre figures, when you have been listening, Brian, to the squawk about South America, Argentina in particular, they finally got rain. That's after a series of weeks that have been very dry and hot. Is there enough there to salvage, and how much of that crop really is in trouble, do you think?
I don't think it's a big portion, in our opinion, based on our contacts down there. I think, obviously, Argentina had some spots that will probably be hurt, but overall, you're still looking at a massive bean crop, and with the peso being as weak as it is, you've got this supply down in Argentina that who knows when it's going to come to the market. And our concern is, irregardless, when you look at acreage and think about the spring, I think Merrill hit the nail on the head with the insurance. You know, if you see an average around 450 in the month of February, our bias is you're not going to see as much reduction in corn acres as anticipated. But on the flip side, you could still see an increase in bean acres. We have to remember that there's over 8 million prevent plant acres, plus the maturing CRP ground that's going to come in, and it's going to go to something. So obviously with the big bean crop in South America, there does cause some concern for the producer to watch new crop bean values, and I think he'd be inclined to take a very high-level product from the insurance to put in a floor, or be looking to minimum price, you know, buying put features, things like that to protect the downside.
Well, Merrill, there is a pretty good spread between the nearby March and the new crop November beans, what, about 78 cents or thereabouts, November beans below the nearby March contract. We had, over time, talked about marketing corn. Is there reason to market new crop soybeans at these levels? Are you concerned that there will be an awfully big bean crop that will push that $11 mark even lower?
I think you have the potential to see beans be pushed down somewhere into 9.5 to 10. There's a lot of fundamental changes that you're going to have to sort through before you get to that point, or can assure yourself you're going to drop that low. As far as marketing, it's questionable. We're right at that point where several people don't think it's going to pencil at $11 futures, because you take your 30 cents off, you're at 1070. So I think maybe an option play would be a great thing for that until we see exactly how the crop turns out, how the logistics out of Brazil work this year as compared to last. So I think there's a chance for somewhat of a rally in the spring. You normally get that seasonally, but I think you better be protecting the downside.
Mel, what are the primary fundamentals you've been watching this week beyond the export market for the corn and the soybeans?
I'm kind of interested in the feed number in the corn, because we've said that that residual number was too high.
Right.
And I wonder, as we go through this colder weather, and as far as what we know from what the forecasters are telling us, this thing's going to stick to with us for a while. So I'm kind of wondering if maybe you won't get your residuals back up there to some extent. Now, I know some of the cold weather is causing some of the reductions in the chickens with the natural gas problems, but you have, I think you're going to feed more with these people trying to expand their markets. They're feeding the hogs heavier. They're feeding the cattle, trying to increase the herd. So I think in the long run, I'm not sure that's going to come down as much as people think.
Brian, take up ethanol and the export market both. We talked about the exports already, but is there a view there that both could continue at the rapid pace that they now have established?
Well, I think the margins have begun in ethanol, and I don't see that changing, at least in the spot market. Again, it really goes back to gasoline usage, and I think, you know, from our perspective, 5 billion bushels is about as much as you're going to see, barring any increase in gasoline usage. So the government's got it pegged about right, and I think they've made big enough adjustments. So in the demand table, the USDA. So as you move forward and you talk about fundamentals and what's going to be important, I think exports obviously are a big one. And Merrill talked about feed, and ethanol is probably at the top end of where it's going to be for the balance of the year. So as we move forward, there isn't a lot of changes we're going to see in the short term, and the market's going to tend to be sideways because of that. But I do think that exports have a chance to be double what they were last year, and feed, I guess it remains to be seen exactly how heavy we are feeding, or will we find back stocks here later on down the road in the next two quarterly stocks reports.
Do you think the WASDE number for the carryout at this point is right in that case?
Well, I think that's a good question. You can make one argument that it's close, because even if we do find back stocks, I think the export number is continuing to grow, and it could potentially be higher to offset some of that. So, you know, I think it is pretty accurate based on what we've seen up to date.
Merrill, are you in agreement on that ending stocks figure?
Yes, I think Brian had a good point with that, and I agree with what he's saying.
Let's bring Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group into our conversation at this point. He's in Chicago, Illinois. Roy, thanks for taking the time with us. We do appreciate it. What's the feel on the floor there at the CME Group, though? I don't know how much of a floor there is anymore. Yeah, so what's the feel in the office space then? How about that?
Well, I think that the market has gone through a transition. You know that that our group has been relatively negative to commodity prices for a while now, probably over the last year. And it has simply had to do with the world growing more and the U.S. losing share in the export trade. When our bearishness started a year ago, margins weren't so good in the livestock industry at all, and they've improved dramatically. I think today I just hung up with one of my cattle guys, and the calves that he put down in November, he can market today at $175, $200 a head out and hedge them into next summer. The cattle that were marketed this last week, the closeouts were close to $300 a head. Most of our hog guys are looking at profitability that's $35, $40, $45 a head. The situation in dairy is biggest checks they've had in a long time, maybe forever in some markets. We're looking at $5 a hundredweight. So I think the profitability in the livestock sector has improved dramatically, and you're going to see your domestic demand for corn stay good. I think the export trade that we're seeing has been muddied by the Chinese GMO situation. And I think that some of the sales that we're seeing are very probably tied to losing some of the Chinese sales. There's still 73 million bushels of corn open to China. And I think that that's being sold off to Spain and Korea and Taiwan. And we just haven't canceled the Chinese side yet.
So, other than the GMOs, and I understand part of that, why do you suppose that China would be canceling corn? It doesn't seem that that's China. There must be something else behind it.
There's an easy answer. The domestic price of corn in China is supported at $10.25 a bushel. U.S. corn lands in China at $3.50 below that. By the time they get all their taxes added on, we're still a buck and a half below their domestic corn prices. And China's got these prices pumped up to encourage domestic consumption, or domestic production, pardon me. So I think it's important to recognize that when they had their plenum this last year, they came out of that and said, hey, we're not going to import all this corn. Stop.
Yeah, so your view here potentially is that they're simply controlling supply.
Absolutely.
Along with price in order to prompt producers to put corn
now,
in the ground.
I think it's very important to recognize that as a consumer in China, you'd like to buy something cheaper than these domestic prices that are pumped up by the government. That's why as we shut off corn sales, All of a sudden, we're finding China's a very active buyer in barley, very active buyer in sorghum. We've got 1.7 million tons of sorghum sales onto China.
Merrill, do you have a question for Roy?
Well, along that lines, I'm of the understanding that they were selling DDGs, and we had some concern about that, but I haven't heard anything lately. What are you hearing about that?
It's hit and miss, Merrill. There were two cargoes of DDGs that were inspected last week that were offloaded. And I just think it depends on what port they go into and what inspectors are looking at them. The major issue is that on DDGs, as compared to corn, there's not a ready market. If you get to China and the Chinese reject it, there's not a ready market to take that DDG somewhere else. There's another problem, too, and a lot of the DDGs were sold to China in containers. The average freight cost of a container is somewhere between $6,000 and $7,000. The stuff that's being sold to go back to China is trading at somewhere around $300 to $350 a container, all as backhauls. So if you get a container of DDGs into China and it's rejected, all of a sudden, not only do you have to find a market for it, it's going to cost you $5,000 or $6,000 to move that container. So you understand the difficulty. And the problem is the buyer would like to get the product that he's bought because it's coming in much cheaper. DDGs only have a 5% import duty compared to an 18% import duty on corn and sorghum and wheat. I just think that most people will have made their deals, and I think we've shipped all the corn we're going to ship to China, and I think we've shipped probably all of the DDGs we're going to ship to China.
Of course, you're listening to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. One of the things I'd like you to do while you're there, or maybe right now, Monday afternoon, one of the two, dial this number, 217-333-7300. You're going to reserve your ticket for our all-day Agricultural Outlook meeting. That's at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You can call at 217-333-7300. All of our analysts, or most of them, will be there for the day-long event. The $30 for the ticket buys you a 25th anniversary hat that says Will Ag on it. It's a really cool-looking hat. We'll get that to you along with Beef House lunch and a continental breakfast, and most importantly, some really good advice on land and cash grain, soybeans, and corn. It's all over at the Beef House on the fourth day of March of 2014 at our all-day Ag Outlook, 217-333-7300. That's the number to call.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
This program, of course, is a production of the University of Illinois. Here, the way the numbers changed on the weekly trade, the March contract from Friday to Friday in the corn pit was up 4.5 cents at $4.34, the high at 434 and three quarters, the low at 427. The monthly posted a hook up 12 cents higher. December contract at $4.50, up 0.5 cent in the new crop, but down 0.25 cent for the month. Soybeans at $12.93 on their top. The bottom for the week at $12.60. A settlement price down 2 cents Friday to Friday on the change at $12.82 3/4, down 9 3/4 for the month. November beans at $11.45, finished 4 3/4 lower for the week, down 30 0.5 cents on the month. And bean meal at $4.26.10 was up 40 cents for the week, $9.10 for the month. March bean oil down $1.49 for the month and up a dime for the week at $37.64. Soft red winter wheat finished the March contract at $5.55 3/4, down 9.5 cents for the week, 49.5 for the month. July futures at $5.61 5 are down 15.5 for the week, and the change for the month down 55.25. April live cattle finished at $140.42 5, up 32.5 on the week and $5.12 5 for the month. March feeder cattle settled $169.42 5 for the week, up 55 cents and $2.02 5 for the month, and the lean hogs finished the April contract at $94.80, 77.5 cents higher for the week, and posted an outside up month at $4.12.5 higher. Now here's the weather forecast with meteorologist Ed Kieser.
This week, one South American weather problem was alleviated while another one appears to be unfolding. Last week, we mentioned an increased chance of showers and thunderstorms in Argentina starting the middle of this week, and that has happened. The spell of hot and dry weather, prevalent through the middle of January, is over. And the forecast calls for frequent bouts of rain in the coming 10 days. In fact, flooding may become an issue in a few areas across northern and central Argentina. While the rain is coming late for some corn, it is coming in time to help soybeans and other late-planted crops. The bottom line is the deterioration due to hot and dry weather has ended in Argentina. The wet weather pattern will also benefit far southern Brazil, namely Rio Grande do Sul and Santa Catarina, and neighboring Paraguay. But farther north, hot and dry weather is likely to be taking center stage in terms of South American weather. An unusually large and strong ridge of high pressure is building into center west and southeast Brazil and is expected to remain through at least the first 10 days of February. That will lead to a long stretch of unseasonably hot and dry weather. Initially, dryness will benefit maturing early planted crops and planting of second season corn. But this pattern will stress any crops now in the vegetative and reproductive stages and all newly planted second season crops. States most impacted will be Goiás, Minas Gerais, Bahia, and Sao Paulo. Mato Grosso, Mato Grosso do Sul, and Paraná will also likely be drier than desired, but are close enough to the edge of the high-pressure ridge to occasionally receive showers and thunderstorms. It will be essential for rain to materialize over this area by mid-February, or second-season crop losses could be large. Dryness in Brazil will become the South American focus until rain arrives.
Our thanks to meteorologist Ed Kieser. I'm Todd Gleason. This has been Illinois Public Media. This is the January 31 edition of Commodity Week. Our panelists include Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, and Brian Stark of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. On the phone line is Roy Huckabee of the Lynn Group out of Chicago. Brian, do you have a question for Roy?
Hi, Roy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Brian.
I had a quick question to ask you. Your opinion, do you think that we are currently understating the size of last year's bean crop? I mean, we currently have, I think, on the books sold about 69 million bushels more than what the government's using as an export estimate. And it doesn't feel, I mean, I know we're showing inverse, but we're not acting like we're as snug as the numbers would suggest as we, at this time of the year, moving forward. So the only thing I've been brainstorming is that maybe we will have a larger residual or a negative findback later on.
Well, you may be right. I think that there's a high probability that we're going to import Brazilian meal and Brazilian beans later in the year. To help offset some of that. I also think that our export sales are overstated. Right now, there's a high probability that we're going to see 70 or 80 million bean sales canceled to China. If you've been watching the Brazilian basis levels, they've gone down every day this week. We've lost about 60 cents in the spot market. Tonight, they're offered at 5 under. Compared to 60 over at the beginning of the week. And the new crop slots, the April-May slots, are offered at 25 under. That's a new low for the marketing year. If you come look for load guarantees, there's probably the offer's more like option price. But that's still, compared to 80 over out of the United States, 80 to 85 over. So I think that there'll be some swaps, and we'll see some of those sales canceled, and it'll be shipped out of Brazil.
Okay. When you look forward into both new crop corn and soybeans, are you still bearish enough at this point that you want producers to continue to market product?
Well, Todd, again, you know I've been fairly bearish, but on this break in corn recently, we've covered all of our old crop hedges and opened back up looking for a bounce back in corn. Did not cover any of the new crop hedges, or didn't I discouraged any of the farmers from covering the new crop hedges. I thought that there was enough downside potential that you needed to stay short there. Same in beans. The guys that I deal with, most of our old crop beans have been sold. We don't have a lot. And the new crop beans, they're 50-55% sold. So I'm of the opinion that the markets still have big downs, probably 50 cents in new crop corn, maybe more, and probably a dollar in new crop beans.
Roy, thanks for taking the time with us today. I do appreciate it. Roy Huckabee, of course, is with the Lynn Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Now time for a final word from our panelists on the phone lines. Brian Stark, we'll start with you of the Andersons from right here in Champaign County.
We enter a critical month here in the month of February as we track our crop insurance averages. I still think producers need to take a high leverage product, and we also like a minimum price strategies protecting the downside and giving some upside for both new corn and new beans.
And Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois.
Well, I believe the safety net in the last 3 years is gone. Profitable prices are in jeopardy. Hoping for higher markets will not pay the bills.
Well, thanks to Merrill Crowley and Brian Stark, along with Roy Huckabee. You've been listening, of course, to Commodity Week. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. A couple of items, the All-Day Ag Outlook, scheduled for the fourth day of March. That's the first Tuesday. You can dial in now at 217-333, actually during business hours during the week. $7,300 for your tickets. $30 buys you the ticket, the meal, and a lot of great advice. The All-Day Ag Outlook over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. You can ask at the same number about our John Deere bus trip. That's March 10, 11, and 12. We'll go see the combines being made in the Quad Cities and head over to Waterloo, Iowa for the tractor plant tour as well at 217-333-7300. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason.